Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, author and storyteller Margot Lightman talks about the stories that we tell ourselves.
I started wearing this necklace of my aunt's, and I was so obsessed with this necklace. And it was a short gold, like choker-type necklace. It was on a circular gold hard strand. I wore it every day, and I was kind of known for this necklace. And I would tell everybody, this is my aunt's. She was an artist. She died young, and I feel a connection to her. And I would wear it all the time. And I'm like, where's the necklace? And he was like, oh my God, I guess it must have fallen off. And I was like, you need to find that because it belonged to my aunt. You have to find that for me. It's all I have from her.
Today on the show, author Margot Lightman talks about a necklace that she cherished and then lost, and stories we tell ourselves. Stay close.
Hey, it's Margot Lightman, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Long-time listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with storyteller Melanie Morris. You know Melanie. Margot.
Yes.
This is exciting because Melanie Morris is on, and then Margot Lightman's on, and then Fielding Edloe's on. I'm on like a nice string of fantastic women, really.
Yeah.
Really, Melanie is just a terrific girl and a really talented storyteller, and she's talking about her story last week, Margot. I don't know if you heard it, but it was about dating a bad dad.
So I've heard her tell that story.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she gets attracted by like this money and the house and the car.
Yeah.
And then he turns out being like a horrible father. how could you even have that person as a friend,
right?
Let alone like kiss them?
Right, yeah.
Like, how gross.
No, it is. It is pretty gross.
Anyway, it's a great story and it's kind of has a twist on it. And Melanie and I really get into talking about dating and it's a good episode. So go back, you guys, and listen to Melanie's episode. But not today, because today, like I said, I'm here with another fantastic storyteller, Margot Lightman. And she brings forth the topic, the stories we tell ourselves.
Yes, in our head. They're so good in our head.
Everybody can totally relate to this, because everybody does this.
Yeah, like creating a fantasy story and then it's not what the fantasy is. I mean, don't we do that a lot? You know,
All the time.
The eulogies we give to people sometimes, you know, it's like a different person than who actually died.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. In that respect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even talking about, any relationship or anything going on, you know, like my old co-host, Hannes Finney, was always one to pull me back in. Like I would start going off on like, well, what if I, you know, get this agent and they don't get along with that manager. So if I ever get that manager, the agent's not going to like him. And Hannes would be like, what are you talking about? You don't have an agent. You don't have a manager. You don't have any jobs.
Right.
And you're worried about problems that aren't existing.
Yeah. I mean, that's anxiety.
Anxiety. That's good.
Oh, I mean, isn't that good, right? Man. It's like worrying about what could happen.
Interesting.
And
yes.
Then reality is, so I heard this once, it's like, if the sentence is, I worry that blank, it's anxiety. And if the sentence is, so it's like, I'm worried that my agent and manager won't get along. That's anxiety because you're worried about it. Or the actual, but if the actuality is my agent and manager don't get along, then you have a problem. So if you take away the I worry,
the worry part.
I worry. And then if you take that away, is the sentence still true? Interesting.
Right.
And it isn't factually
true. Right.
I mean, I'm really great at telling people this. I'm not good at applying it to my own life.
Yeah, I understand. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Because a worry is not necessarily, is it a verb or is it just a feeling? Like,
I don't know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. But that's very easy to happen, you know, to have that kind of anxiety. I know leaving auditions and stuff and you start replaying it in your mind. How did it go? And then you start thinking, well, if they call me, I'm not available on that night, but maybe I could switch. I could get a babysitter. I could go. And then I get, it's like,
oh my God,
nobody even called.
If you've talked yourself out of possibly even shooting this before they've even called.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
But by the time they don't call, you've forgotten about it too. It's insane. I know.
The stories we tell ourselves. And I also do it. And you travel a lot. I used to travel a lot. Not so much anymore. But I did go do my one woman show in Portland. I'm going to do it in Pittsburgh. And so going to different cities to do shows, you know, it's like there's a bit of anxiety thinking about, okay, I got to fly there. I got to land. I got to get a car. I got to go to this hotel. I don't know the tech person. I don't know the theater. But the thing is once you start doing it and the ball's in motion, every step is such a baby step.
It's such a baby step.
No big deal.
The big thing, you know, that I would worry about is if I were to be touring with a one-woman show, would be what if no one comes?
Right.
And then I have to say, you know, I had a therapist once that would always say, think about the worst possible scenario and then imagine yourself in it. Would you survive? Right? Which is a great way to look at it. So I was on a tour with a storytelling show with a partner. This was like 8 years ago or something. Yeah. And we had a Seattle date. And it did happen that something happened where it wasn't listed or it didn't, something got wrong or the venue
Nobody
didn't put it on
up.
Their website or something like that. Something went wrong. And we got there and there were zero reservations and no one was coming.
Oh
and
God.
it was that. And we had flown to Seattle, probably flown ourselves, you know, and we're there. And so this is what happened. I went backstage and silently freaked out. And my partner, God bless her, went into the streets and just told people to come in. Then we went.
Like, there's a show happening now.
Come on in. And she got like 8 to 10 people in.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think we had been like talking to the concierge at the hotel who had given us his card or something.
So you called him.
And asked
said,
him to come.
Okay.
That was our one person we knew in town. And he
God.
Came.
Oh.
And I remember we just like looked out there at these like 10 strangers and the concierge sitting by himself in the corner. And it was so funny. And it was, I mean, and we just did the show.
I'm so glad you laughed.
And it was just so odd. And then at the end of it, it was like, okay, we faced it. We had a show. There were zero reservations.
But wait a minute.
And it wasn't that bad.
But what about the financial aspect of it? Because, you know, when I've been doing these shows, it's like split the door or they get a certain amount
right.
of money. So how did you pay for that theater?
I don't recall. This was a while ago. I don't know that if we had to split pay for the theater or not, or because the theater was negligent in not listing it on their website or they had made some mistake or something like that. I think we didn't have to.
Yeah.
It was something that had happened
good.
That they...
Because that is a technicality. If they didn't get the word out at all, they didn't hold up their end of the bargain.
I don't think they held up their end of the bargain. So I don't think we owed anything is what I think happened.
I don't think people realize that when you do a solo show, most of those shows, even if you're renting out Radio City Music Hall, you are renting that theater. They're not inviting you just to come for the hell
right.
of it. You're going in there and renting it. And I just did my solo show at the White Fire Theater Festival,
mm-hmm.
or White Fire Solo Festival. How much do you think it cost me, Margo?
$300.
Up.
Wow. Really? How much?
A Saturday night show, $800.
And did you make it back?
I got back $725.
So it cost you $75.
Yeah,
but that's
not that
how
bad.
Much
I
we
felt
love
good about it.
Our art is that we are willing to pay to do it. I thought about that. You know, Bukowski said that once in a quote. He said, I love writing so much, I would pay someone else so I could do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm paraphrasing. It's not exactly what he said.
No, I get
but
it.
I get it.
Well, I do too. And I felt like I got off the hook pretty good with, you know, just losing $75. But there is an anxiety level to that, obviously. Now, this topic you're bringing forth, the stories we tell ourselves, like, I know enough now that that's not a big deal. But I could see me doing this 15 years ago when I did. I had a solo show in 1999, and I remember freaking out about audience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you start compiling the problems one on top of another, and especially you think you're going to fail, and it's going to suck, and this is the only night that matters.
Yeah.
Forgetting that this is one night, and you're going to tell this story, or you're going to do this show 40 more times, 50 more times. So this is just one of them. Just roll with it.
Right.
But it is easy to get anxious and create narratives, especially when there's money involved and you have a child.
Right.
You know what I mean? She wants to eat every day, which is so odd.
Not every other.
I know, exactly. But anyway, so it can be stressful. Listen, I'm going to tell you something about what I bought for myself recently, because I deserve it. And that is a piece of Ana Luisa jewelry. Have you seen this jewelry?
Not before today. It's lovely.
It is so beautiful. I got to tell you, you know, big brands charge you 10 times the cost of production. That's what they charge you. But these guys eliminate the retail markup and they keep the prices as fair and as accessible as possible. And the products come from the same jewelers as Tiffany's and Louis Vuitton. And so it's the same quality jewelry, but at a lot better price. Now, this one I have on now is called the Moonstone Layered Necklaces. And so there's two different necklaces you see. They're both gold. I don't wear a lot of gold, and now I'm starting to wear it again. You have on gold.
I wear a lot of gold.
Yeah. It's funny how it goes back and forth, right? Like I was into silver for a long time, and now I'm back to gold.
Yeah.
Anyway, this jewelry is just beautiful, you guys. You've got pearls, silver, gold, amazing necklaces, layered necklaces, textured coin necklaces, which are like my very, very favorite. And right now, you guys, head over to annaluisa.com/storyworthy and check these out. I know you guys are going to love them. Again, it's annaluisa.com/storyworthy, annaluisa.com/storyworthy, and check out this jewelry. Treat yourself, you guys, or buy something for somebody that you love. You're going to love this Ana Luisa jewelry. I know it. Okay, you guys, before we get to Margot's story, I did want to remind you to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy. What's your preferred social media, Margot Lightman?
Oh, yeah. You mean of all of them, what's my absolute favorite?
Like, what do you like to do during the day?
I think I would prefer Instagram.
Yeah.
And you prefer Twitter?
I prefer Twitter. Because Twitter, I feel like, I don't know, it's like, maybe because it's the combination of people I follow.
Yeah.
Really funny people. And then also, I really like getting up-to-date news.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the quickest way.
Good.
Whereas Instagram, well, I don't
know. No, I don't think there's much news there. I think that's why I like it.
Instagram is like a mini Facebook. A lot of pictures.
Yeah, what I like about Instagram is, it's, for me, I follow a lot of people that put colorful piles of books. Yeah, that's what I follow is just people with like color coordinated books. It's really calming for me.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
that's my deal.
I get it. I totally get that. On Twitter, I follow Kruger National Park over in Africa. And beautiful. I just watch the Serengeti, the animals. I just watch them all the time. And I comment, and now they comment back to me. I have this whole relationship going with the with the safari guides over there. Well, no, sometimes they get annoyed with me because I'm like, you can't take pictures. You know, I see the cheetah, but I don't want to see all the cars. I don't want to see the traffic.
Oh, have you told them this?
Yes, of course.
Okay, good.
They know how I feel.
That's great.
They're probably like, who is this crazy lady who tweets us every night at 4 a.m.? That's me. Anyway, you guys, also, I would be remiss not to mention to follow my other podcast, ScrewedUpStories.com, along with comedian Rachel O'Brien. She's fantastic. We're having a really great time. We've done about 30 shows, all women.
Wow.
Margot Lightman, you're coming.
I'm coming soon.
The smartest, the funniest, the brightest women are on our show. We're so happy to be doing it, and we're laughing our butts off. So please, you got to do that too. So check it out at ScrewedUpStories.com. And of course, you can follow both podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, you know, wherever you listen to your stuff. I don't have to tell you. I know that. Sorry. All right, you guys, she's here right now. Margot Lightman. Margot, you have a brand new book out.
It's about to be released this summer, but it's available for pre-order.
It's available for pre-order right now over on Amazon. It's called What's Your Story?
Yeah.
And you have already had two other books, including one that was a best-selling book, Long Story Short, The Only Storytelling Guide You'll Ever Need, and Gawky, Tales of an Extra Long Awkward Face. That's the one I have in my bedroom, actually.
Oh, that's the one you have.
Gawky, yeah,
oh,
I have
my
that.
My first book.
I love that book.
Thank you.
It's super sweet. High school, junior high.
Yeah.
You were tall.
I was.
So this is your third book, which is very exciting.
It is.
Does the process get easier, or
I
is
think
it?
So it the process of selling it, selling a book, got easier as the books.
Because you've got a better publisher.
Because I had good numbers. My second book sold very well. So the process of selling this third book was much easier than selling the first or second.
So exciting.
Which that process is long, you know, trying to get it out there.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It sure is. Well, this is exciting. I'm so glad for you. And you go around, you teach storytelling all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even like just saying all over the world. You really go. Well, you've been into India. You've been in all different countries.
In Australia, yeah. Pretty far. Only the furthest places.
Yeah, you
I
just
could
go where it's 14
go.
Hours.
I don't go to Canada. I mean, that would be too close.
It's not international. Enough. You have to cross like 10 times.
Yeah.
Zones.
Yeah.
That is exciting. And so this is a naive question, but of course you teach in English.
Yes.
Obviously Australia, we're good. But what about India? How did that?
I taught in English there. Yeah.
Was there a translator?
No. The attendees spoke English. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. I mean, to have to learn a whole other language before a job would be pretty intense.
No, I know, but they have translators.
Oh. Yeah, no, okay. No translator. I don't think there was a translator. Yeah. That's a very good question.
You have written so much. What do you think you like better, writing or performing?
Performing.
Yeah.
I'm performing storytelling, yes.
Yeah.
But because I love to write.
Because I know, but the thing is when you're on stage, you get that immediate gratification.
Yeah.
Writing, you're just holed up for months on end until
someone
the book drops.
Someone asked me that. Someone that's a TV writer asked me, what's the process, the difference between if you've sold a book or sold a TV show, like the writing process on that. Right. And I said, because I've worked in TV writers' rooms, and I said, you know, in a writer's room, for me, it's you're in the room with other people, you throw something out there, and you go, is this good? And then someone can tell you it's good or it's not good immediately, and then you move on and you all work together. When you're writing a book, you're alone for a long time.
Right.
You write it all. You go to yourself, is this good? I don't know. I don't know if this is good. This is terrible. This is probably terrible. I have no idea.
Right.
And then you turn months later a giant manuscript in, and then you wait for a long time, and then you get the giant manuscript back. So it's so different.
And they hashed it up? Or
yeah. But I mean, like, all of those questions, you get answered all at once, not on a day-to-day basis, and it's much more solitary, and it's much, but strangely, I prefer it. I've done both.
Yeah. That's nice to have that blend.
Yeah.
You have written for DreamWorks TV, the Hallmark Channel, the Pixel Network, and you've performed on Best Week Ever and Late Night with Conan O'Brien. That was exciting.
In New York, yeah. I mean, I did a lot of sketch performances on there. I was not a comedian on there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was an actor on there for a long time, and I had recurring roles, which
That's
was
so
fun.
That's so nice. Yeah. That's exciting. I did one on Jimmy Kimmel, but it was only one
spot.
It did include Fred Willard, so that was nice.
That is cool.
I know, that was kind of a fun, that was a fun, it was a really fun day, in fact.
Yeah, no, I had a character that I did for a long time in there. It was really fun.
And it reoccurred. What was the character?
The character was pretty iconic.
What?
The character was called Gynoblast, and they even made a little action figure of her and everything like that. And it was this woman who could shoot babies out of her vagina into a bullseye.
Oh my God.
And well, we did a lot of different variants on it. And I did it for a while. Like, I was on a lot of episodes as Gynoblast.
That's so nice.
Whenever we were promoting, I didn't work there officially, but whenever they were promoting any sort of superhero movie or something like that, and they had someone on that was going to be in it, they would always bring me back be there with Wolverine or whatever it was.
Oh, that was
so
fun.
It was pretty fun. Yeah, I was there for a bit.
Your stories have been featured on The Moth Podcast, Risk, and NPR's Unfictional, Good Food, and Strangers. What was on Good Food?
My story about Reese's peanut butter cups.
Really? It sounds intimate.
Yeah, it was really deeply personal.
Do you love Reese's peanut butter cups?
I like the holiday edition.
Yeah.
The eggs.
You mean the eggs. Yeah, the eggs. It's just and even the pumpkin. It's just like that, the whole.
Well, it's the consistency. It's a higher percentage of peanut butter to chocolate. And then there's no ridge. It's all middle.
Yeah, it's all middle.
Yeah.
It's so true.
And it's saltier.
It's more like a dough.
Yes, it's much saltier than the cup.
Interesting.
So I did a full story about something that happened to me surrounding that.
But a full story?
It was at least 6 minutes. And it was on there. Yeah.
That is too funny.
So it was a story about food, yeah.
You guys can find Margot over at margolightman.com and also on Twitter and Instagram at Margot Lightman. You have both, don't you?
I do have both,
yes. How lucky you are.
To have my own name?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's really hard sometimes to get your own name on across the board.
Well, I don't have... is there another?
You have margolightman.com. You have at margolightman on Twitter and Instagram. I'm just saying. So those three things.
Yeah, I have it all.
You have it all, man.
I've got it all. All right, it's hard to have it all, Christine.
You
That's
are,
hard.
Put your hands together for Margot Lightman.
So growing up, my mom had a twin sister who died very tragically at 35. And I did not remember her growing up. And she was this beautiful woman who died very young, who was an artist, and I think I was 3 or 4 when she passed away, and I have no memory, actual memory of her, but she was my mom's twin. And my mom was a very together person. She's a school teacher, and she's paints on the side and sings on the side, but she was never went for it as an artist. And I think she may have loved to have done that with her life, but she did something more sensible and was a teacher. But her sister, at the time of her death, had done fashion school and art school, and there were some paintings of hers around, and she was this very kind of, in my head, this brooding artist that, had she lived, would have understood me and would have been my best friend. And when my mom, you know, didn't get me, that my aunt would have, and I was so saddened by her death, and I, of the woman I had never met, you know, and I had throughout my years idealized her as that this was this, you know, tragic artsy figure that I somehow connected to from the grave. And my mom and I we didn't talk too much about her, but if I asked questions, she would be honest with me about, you know, things about it. And she was a very, you know, imperfect person, which also to me, I related to as an imperfect person myself. And I just felt like she was this person in my family that I I never, at times with my mom's side of the family, I didn't quite, they're kind of like people that have boats in Connecticut, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm not really that type. So I didn't always feel a deep connection with them. And so I felt like this aunt would have been that person for me. And so in my teenage years, I started wearing this necklace of my aunt's, and I was so obsessed with this necklace. And it was a short gold, word of the day, short gold, like choker type necklace. It was on a circular gold hard strand, and it had this giant star on it that had psychedelic colors like orange and yellow, and it had this psychedelic swirl in the middle of it, and it was big, and it would, so if you wore like a scoop neck, you could really just see it.
It was like a piece. Like a statement piece.
Yeah, right.
Statement piece.
So a statement piece you wear like once in blue. I wore it every day. And I wore it a lot. And I was kind of known for this necklace. And I would tell everybody, this is my aunt's. She was an artist. She died young. And I feel a connection to her. And this is her necklace. And this is why I wear it. I wear it for her memory. And I would wear it all the time. In my senior picture, in my yearbook, I have it on. I made sure that, you know, I pulled this like dumb robe they made us wear like down low enough so you could see the necklace in the picture. And it really takes over the picture. And then I went off to college and I wore it all the time and I was known for it. And it was just my thing, you know, like Laverne with the L on the sweater from Laverne and Shirley. That was my thing. And it was this thing that it was like, I am an artist and I am going to fulfill the rest of my aunt's destiny. And I'm going to live my life as an artist and I'm going to, you know, I connect.
It's beautiful.
It was. And, so I wore it all the time. And then my senior year of college, so 4 years I wear it, and high school, so about, I'm wearing it for like 8 years, and then my senior year of college, my friend dressed up as me for Halloween, and he like broke into my room and took a bunch of my clothes, wore this long blonde wig, and took the necklace that, and you know, surprised me on Halloween that he was dressed up on me, which is like super funny for a lot of people, slightly creepy, you know, for me in some ways, because I was like, wow, this is a really, you know, to be dressed up as me is flattering, but also like a weird amount of attention. And so he does this thing, and we have all these pictures of that night of him in the necklace, and it's this wild house party in a yard where there's just like stuff everywhere and beer and everything, you know, like that. And then the next day, he, you know, he drops off my clothes, and I'm like, where's the necklace? And he was like, oh my God, I guess it must have fallen off. I'll go back and I'll find it. And I was like, you need to find that because it belonged to my aunt. And he, everyone knew the whole story of my tragic aunt. And I was like, you have to find that for me. It's all I have from her. And he's like, I will. I'm so sorry. So he goes back and he just scours this giant yard of this house party with beer cans and everything out there. And he calls me about 2 hours later and he's like, it's gone. I can't find it anywhere. I don't know. Maybe someone picked it up, but it's completely gone. And I just was destroyed by it. I was like, this is all I had. And it felt like this, I don't know, this piece of string between my aunt and I was completely gone. So, and then the bigger issue was, how do I tell my mom that I lost her twin sister's heirloom that she, you know, entrusted me with? And my mom's going to be devastated. And so I call my mom and I tell her what happened. And I tell her, you know, I'm so sorry, but it's not my fault. And like, he took it. I didn't even give it to him. And she, my mom's listening to this whole story. And she was like, which necklace? And I was like, the star, the orange and yellow, the psychedelic star and the short gold choker like thing. And she's like the big one? And I'm like, yeah, the one I wore all the time. And she goes, oh, Margo, that wasn't my sister's. She goes, my friend Susan gave that to me for my birthday like 8 years ago. I thought it was so ugly, so I just gave it to you. She's like, before I gave it to the Goodwill. She's like, that was like a rejected birthday gift from my friend. She's like, it wasn't old. She bought it at some craft fair. Like, and then I hated it. And my mom's like, who cares that it's gone? And I was like, oh my gosh, this whole time. And she was like, no one cared. And so it was so freeing because I had connected so much emotion and there was nothing there. Nothing.
But where did it come from? Where was the original concept of the necklace?
What do you mean?
When it got into your hands, you had been told what? Or you just took it? Or how?
It was a story I told myself.
You took it from your mom's house then? It must
My
have
mother
house.
Must have said to me,
you can have anything.
Do you want
in this
necklace?
Or whatever.
I don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
When I mean, so we're just talking about freshman year of high school, so 8 years prior.
Yeah.
I think she must have, I don't recall ever receiving this necklace, but my mother, I guess, had said to me, do you want this necklace? I don't want it. Yeah. And somehow that had been intertwined with another narrative.
Well, and you were a young girl. So these teenage girls, you know, your mind starts going off. Did your mom have pictures of her sister around the house?
Yeah.
Were they identical twins? Or
no.
They were fraternal?
No, fraternal.
What kind of artist was she? A dancer?
More of a visual artist, yeah. Which was not my medium, but I still relate it. And when you're a brooding, depressed teenager, to know that there was this other figure in your life that possibly could have understood you.
You never saw the necklace in a picture of her or anything.
No.
Because it didn't exist. Because she never even touched that necklace.
She was dead by the time the necklace had been in the house. She was dead for a long time time the necklace
that
was in my house.
So funny.
Yeah. There was no connection to her.
So
and
did
this
you
necklace.
Tell your friend who thought he lost it?
Gosh.
Do you remember that conversation? Like, okay, you can stop looking.
Well, I believe I did tell him that and he felt free. But then like months later, this friend, while he was, I think, on like acid or something or ecstasy or something, had this really intense confession of like really strong feelings for me that I had been unaware of until that time.
Yeah.
And then like after the drugs wore off, he didn't feel that way anymore. It was very confusing. But during that, I remember being like, okay, I was right that him dressing up as me for Halloween was a little off.
I don't like that. When you said that, like, I don't know if it was like a group costume and different people were doing each other. But if one person would dress like me, I don't know, I would feel funny
about
that.
He did me and a friend of his did a friend of mine. And it was just two girls.
So
it wasn't a big group, no.
Yeah.
So I did, when he did that confession thing, I was like, see, the costume was creepy. And now this is a lot.
I wonder if he actually kept that necklace. He could have
it. Do you think he has it? Now he's created a narrative.
Seriously.
About how he was the one that got away.
The one that got away.
Dead ants.
Necklace. An artist.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole thing. I mean, or someone found
it
in the grass.
Are you friends with him on Facebook?
Well, I'm not on Facebook, so.
Oh, are you friends with him on Instagram or anywhere? Where does he live? Let's tell him to listen to
this. He lives in another country. No, let's not.
They got the internet.
No, let's keep him out. Just let him
be. Wouldn't it be funny if you got that back someday?
I don't think he has the necklace.
Give it to your mom.
I don't think that he has the necklace. This is what I think.
Yeah.
I think it fell off. I think some drunk person found it and they have it.
Yeah.
And they've created a story.
Yeah. But still, sometimes they would just give it to the person who owned the house and say, like, I found this, you know, or leave it on the counter.
But then he went back.
Yeah.
And they know that it wasn't there.
When you were talking about an artist, your aunt, and dying young and everything, I was thinking of Isabella Duncan.
Isadora
Duncan. Yeah, that's it. Isadora. And I always think of her like in this, you know, way of a young artist and, you know, I don't know, as a dancer, a modern dancer. And
I was a modern dancer.
Yeah. Oh, you were?
Yeah.
No kidding.
In college, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's hard, right?
I mean, if you're really good.
Yeah.
If you're sort of okay at it, it's not that hard.
Did you actually take classes in
modern? Yeah, I minored in dance.
You minored
and,
in
And like concentrated
really?
On modern,
That's
yeah.
super interesting.
I mean, I talk about it a lot, Christine. It's like my favorite thing to talk to people
not.
About. Yes, I love to bring it up at parties because it's like, it makes me seem like I'm a fancier person than I actually
am.
Well,
that's what I'm thinking right now, the Isadora Duncan thing.
Right, but I'm named after Margot Fonteyn, the ballerina.
Interesting.
But I just think that when my friends joke with me about how long is it going to take me in a conversation to bring up my dance minor. It's like a running joke and they'll go, I didn't know you were. Because I talk about it so much and I'm so proud of it and it's such like a little dignified thing about myself.
I took one semester of ballet and I got a C.
Oh, really?
It's so hard. Dance is hard. My daughter's into it. I love it. Interesting. Do you do any classes now?
No, I was just on a boat, a cruise ship, and they were doing a group dance class. And I thought, okay, I'll go to this and this will be my workout. And I got there and I was immediately annoyed that it was moving too slowly and people didn't know what they were doing. And I left.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that terrible?
Well, the thing is on a ship, you know, you'll have that. You know,
well, I was possibly the best dancer in the group, which I've never been the best dancer ever.
Yeah.
But amongst that crew of people, I think I was. And
were
I
they
think,
all old?
No, it was even they children were there,
really?
You know,
oh,
so
yeah.
It was all ages, but it's a matter of, I don't, you know, in college I always called myself the best of the worst dancers. Like in the beginner classes, the 101s, I was very good. But then when I started passing into the level twos and the advanced ones, I was the worst.
Wow.
So that was easier than the easiest. So then I left.
Yeah.
But I'm
no,
not,
I understand.
Yeah.
I understand. If it's below you, it's not fun. I mean, you could lose interest if it's not.
But I mean, it's below me is really stretching it.
I'm just saying. I mean, that's like if I go play tennis. I mean, I, you know, if it's a very beginner's class, I'm not
right.
Have
no,
any
exactly.
Fun.
Yeah. But I mean, so I had to do a big final and a big choreographed piece for my you know senior
college,
year. Yeah, kind of the equivalent of a thesis, I guess. Yeah. I had to do a very big elaborate thing with I auditioned dancers and we choreographed this whole piece. And
what was
yeah.
the music?
It was to Paul Simon's because it's modern dance.
Yeah.
Cool, Cool River.
Huh.
Yeah, it has really strong percussion in there.
Yeah.
And modern dance is based on the contraction, which
right.
is a dance move. So
right.
you have to like, I'm demonstrating, which you guys yeah. can't see, but it really fit with the tone of it. That's why a lot of modern has a lot of drumming
I
in
had
it.
No idea.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
So,
you should find a class around here.
I know.
They've got adult stuff going on.
You know, it's interesting. In New York, where I used to live, about 10 years ago or so, I went to the gym had a ballet class, and we started to do a warm-up. And I got in there, and the warm-up was, I think there's a traditional ballet warm-up
yeah.
that you do in every class, which
sure.
is a certain type, you know.
Go through the different movements. Or
right.
Different...
And it started, and I teared up.
Oh.
Like I just like felt something in me that came back. And when I first moved here, I took one ballet class, and then I got pregnant like midway and stopped. And I haven't been back since I've had children. But I imagine it would be really emotionally good for me to go
yeah.
back to it. I
yeah.
really like...
It's so personal.
Oh, God, yeah.
And
it was the best
your,
I've ever felt in my life.
And you go at your own pace, you know? It's almost like yoga that way. It's very... It's your own body, right. your own pace where you're at is a good place.
And yoga, I love because of my dance background, I'm super flexible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I like in those classes being that they'll be like, oh, look, you could go
yeah.
halfway or all the way up. And I'm always like, I could go all the way. And this
yeah.
is so good for my ego.
Yeah.
Which is what yoga is really about, being good for the ego, right?
No, it's not. Hey, listen, I mean, your mom is a twin. You
yeah.
could have had twins, Marco.
I was pretty genetically predisposed to have children, twins, and
you
I did
it. You did not have to. You have a
no.
six-year-old and a two-year-old, but
both
you,
singular birth. No, like second twin that passed away
like,
or anything. Yeah, both
you
times
told
I
told your husband, hey, you know.
My gynecologist told me it was highly likely that I would have twins because
yeah.
it's something like he broke it down for me.
I know there's something about if it's the mother's daughter
and it's
fraternal,
then you are a high percentage
yeah.
of having twins. And if you are over 5 without any sort of fertility drugs or anything, but if you're just over 35, you're even more likely, which I
yeah.
wasn't on my first, but I was on my second.
Yeah.
So on my second, I was even more, because then I added a third factor of likelihood.
Right.
And then there's something about, I don't know if this is an old wives' tale or not, about tall women being predisposed to twins as well,
that.
Which is another thing. So I had, it was like I had every
different
box.
Different things going on.
And none of them were twins.
Were you glad?
I mean, don't know.
If you had twins,
I have
then
no
you'd
idea.
Kind of be down your family like right away. But
I have
boy,
no idea if I'm glad or not. I don't know. I know people that have twins and they're great with it. I don't know
yeah.
if I'm glad
are
I
they,
did or didn't.
Are they great with it?
My friends that have just twins seem to be managing okay.
Yeah.
And my friends that have twins and more children on top of that, it seems like it's a lot.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah.
Ay,
so I don't know if I'm glad or not. I don't know, have anything to compare it to.
Okay. So listen, you go around the world. You talk about storytelling.
Yeah.
Do you have, I mean, obviously you have like a syllabus in your head, how you break it down for
yes.
people. Do you have like 3 tips you can share with our audience?
Sure.
Is one like make it personal?
Well, I mean, I think that's...
Kind of has to be, right?
Yeah.
Or is that like a given?
I mean, that's a given. I don't usually say that because I think that if you're going to tell a story, it should... It's going... I mean, how can it not
know,
be personal?
Here's where I... And I've... You know, you're like my 555th podcast just with Storyworthy. So, and I've done a lot of other shows as
Do
well.
Do you mean literally 555?
Yeah. You're like my 555th. Yeah. I'm going
wow.
on my 9th year. And so I've heard a lot of stories. And here's where... This is when I feel like it's not a good story. When somebody doesn't make it personal. And what I mean by that is when somebody says, this happened to my aunt. Here's a crazy story that happened to my aunt. And I don't care because it didn't happen to you.
Okay, so then the way I would phrase that is you're the star of your own story.
Yeah,
is
but,
what
but
is
people
the
do that. Yeah, you have to be the star of your own story. Otherwise, yeah, your aunt could have an interesting story, but it's not your story. It's her story. And when you just try to translate it,
yes.
I'm not saying it's still not entertaining, but you're not gripping me because it didn't happen to you. And so you could tell it, you could tell it, you could. Anybody could tell that story.
Right, so I would say you're the star of your own story. So if it's someone else's story, it's their story to tell, I believe.
Right.
And then your story needs to be... You can tell a story that maybe someone else is... it's happening too, but there, but you have to insert yourself into what's happening around you and have yourself be a part of that story. So if it's the story of, like, a woman just took my class, my storytelling class, and she told the story of her adoption, right? So that's kind of her parents' story, right? But she told it in a really great way about how she talked about you being, the feeling of being wanted and how Hollywood can make you feel so unwanted, and how this, she always, you know, thinks about this time where she was so very wanted by her adoptive parents and such. And it was a really great spin on it. And she could just say, this is the story of my parents adopting me, but instead it was, this is the feeling I have surrounding my adoption. Yeah. And this if is how I channel
had,
that.
If she had talked about, here's what my parents had to go through. First they did this, then they did this, and then they adopted me. That would be a horrible story.
Yeah. So, but it wasn't that way. She told it and she made herself the star, and it was so well done and beautiful.
So that's what I mean. When I say you got to make it personal, I mean, some people don't get that.
Yeah, I just say you are the best lead actor or actress in your story, and everyone else is this will win the supporting actor or supporting actress. If you tell a story where you're the supporting actor in the story, that's not going to work. You have to be
the
star.
It's almost like being a comedian. Like if I just tell you a joke, okay, these two guys walk into a bar. That's not my joke. Anybody could tell that joke.
Right.
But if I'm a comedian and I'm on stage, it needs to be, I walked into this bar the other night and here's what happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Huh, that's just occurring to me.
Yeah. So, yeah, you are the star of your own story, and remember that always.
Give us two more things.
Okay. I would say keep it true.
Yeah.
which sounds like a given.
Again, sounds like a given, but people, what happens? What do you think happens?
I think people think their story's not interesting enough or funny enough, so they need to fabricate something to make it better. But what happens is, if a story is too perfect, then we know it's not true.
Yeah.
So you have to keep it true, and real life isn't perfect. It's messy. It's like you've got jam all over your fingers, and and you can't get the stick off. I mean, that's life. You know, it's not a perfect
life.
Wow,
that's interesting.
So you have to, you know, I mean, there's so many other ways my story that I just told that I'm just, you know, I'm just kind of riffing that story with you. It's not a really polished story, but there's other ways that that story would be perfect, which would be, you know, and then he found the necklace right as I found out I was pregnant with twins. You know what I mean? Something like that, right? And that's too perfect.
But isn't it true, though, that like if you're really breaking down a story and it's very technical, every line that you say, if it's in the first chapter or the last, you know, the first paragraph or the last paragraph, kind of has to refer back to something else so that things do connect, so it gets cleaned up. But I'm not saying go out on a limb and say something that's untruthful, but yet if you didn't know what happens, like in other words, you know, I never found out what happened to that necklace because life is messy. Like I said at the beginning of the story, life can be, in other words, you tie it back.
Sure.
So if you tie it back, you are keeping it super clean and tight. Like if you're doing a solo show, like if it's a solo show, I'm not saying it has to be perfect, but you should have thought it out that it's almost perfect as best it can be. Does that make sense?
I think what I would say about that is that it needs to pay off.
It needs to pay off.
So, you know, I'm taking one of these masterclasses online right now. You know what I'm talking about?
Not really. Oh, like masterclass by Judd Apatow or
yeah. So I'm taking
teaches,
the one with
Dan. Steve Martin does one.
Oh yeah. Okay. I'm taking the one about thriller writing with Dan Brown, which is great. It's a skill I don't have, and I would like to write a thriller someday. And you know, he talked about this a lot. Is that I don't, and I am absolutely misquoting him, but the general feeling of it was, if you spend a page describing this clock tower, I really hope in the last chapter that someone dies getting pushed off this clock tower, because otherwise you just wasted a page of this book. You know, you spend a page describing it. It needs to pay off. And I agree with that in terms of a short story that you're telling on stage. If that you spend a lot of time introducing Teresa, she better be your partner in crime for the story. Yeah. She better not just be the other woman in the office.
So in other words, when you're talking about you've got to keep it truthful, don't go off and think it's not. Because you don't think your story is interesting enough, just tie up the story you have.
Yeah, so add details to something if your story will pay off with those details.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Do not take a lot of time with that and unnecessarily if it's not going to pay off.
And don't lie. Try not to lie.
Yeah, don't lie. I mean, I'm okay with things like, you know, you don't know the exact number of how many hours you were there, and you say you were there for 3 hours, and then later you checked a document and you were there for 4 hours. I don't care about stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Okay, what's the third tip?
Oh, okay. You're putting me on the spot here. So first one was keep it, we said You're the Star of Your Own Story was number one. Number two was Keep It True.
Yep.
I would say number three would be Less Is More. Yeah, I would say Keep totally. It Short.
Oh, my God.
I am not always the best example of this, but I will say that I think we tune out after about 12 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. It's so, yeah.
Max. And I, again, someone's going to go, oh, I found a 13-minute story of you on YouTube. I know. Nobody's perfect. But I do think
it
that...
It depends on the venue. It depends on what you're in
for. If you're doing a one-person show, well, go for
only
it.
One of you, right. But if you're going on... If you're looking at five storytellers, everybody... It's like comedy. Keep it... You know, brevity is the key.
You know, when I used to host a storytelling show, my friend one night... We had a late night show. It was like 11 p.m.
Yeah.
And my friend got up and he told a 16-minute story and he didn't realize he had gone that long. 16 minutes.
Yeah.
On a show that there's four other storytellers.
Yeah, that's
and after
a long
the show,
time.
Because he was a friend, I was able to, I just said it. I said, do you know that you went for 16 minutes? He was like, I had no idea. I was like, that's like a
how
couple.
How couldn't you know? That's not true.
Sometimes
you
just
know?
Lose track. I mean, you're not timing yourself.
Well, I do. I time myself all the
while
time.
While you're on stage, you're not looking at a clock.
No,
usually,
but I mean,
you know?
I'm practicing and I time it out when I'm, you know, right. into my phone.
Maybe he didn't practice. I don't yeah. know. But I was very direct with him because he was a friend.
Good. Yeah.
And he was very apologetic and it never happened again. But it's, you know, I mean, that to me, I've seen one person shows that are 25 minutes. It was close to a one person show that he did.
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, Story Smash, you've played Story Smash
yeah.
several times. And I always
say
that
you are the queen of Less Is More there.
You can tell any story in 1 minute. You really mm-hmm. can. Mm-hmm. I mean, and after that, it's all detail. I feel like it's so funny on Story Smash because the 1 minute stories go quickly. And then when it gets up to the 3 minute stories, I'm like, I settle in, I buy a beer. Like, I know I'm not
minutes.
On stage for another
right.
2.5 minutes. I feel like I could run to the bathroom.
Right.
It just seems like so long, 3 minutes.
Yeah. You know, when I was acting in New York, I remember we were in a class once and a teacher asked this woman to talk. He goes, I'm going to give you 60 seconds. Now tell me about yourself. This was like in the
yeah,
class
yeah.
and she really froze
yeah.
and just talking about, you know, she was so, which is interesting because I was like, oh my God, ask me to do this. I could do this.
Yeah.
But because she was so used to playing other people.
Yeah.
When they asked her about herself and she had to fill 60 seconds with it, she really
that's
had
an
not
actor,
much to
an
say.
Actor.
Yeah. The
but
actress.
That's very common. That, I mean,
yeah.
That, and my experience is that's why I mostly have comedians on the show.
Yeah.
Because actors and actresses, you got to put the words in their mouth. I don't.
It's interesting.
Don't
but for me, I was like, put me in, coach.
Yeah,
I can do this. I
want to.
But I think that was a defining moment of me kind of realizing how much saying other people's words wasn't really my jam, you
yeah.
know?
You're
and it was interesting.
You're a storyteller. You're a monologist. Is
yeah.
that a word?
Monologist.
Monologist.
Yeah.
Wow.
Have you been saying it wrong your whole life?
I've never said it before.
How? What's this one? B-I-O-P-I-C. Is it
biopsy?
Biopic or
biopic.
Is it biopic or biopic?
Biopic. No. It's biopic. Meaning like, in other words, like the story
Whitney
about...
Whitney Houston biopic.
Biopic, yeah.
Not Whitney Houston biopic.
No, I think it's right. biopic because it's biography / picture.
Okay.
I think I'm not positive.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
It's one I've been wondering about.
Thank you so much. I love having you on all the shows I do.
And
thank you. I think you're such a talent. You're so
you.
Fun to listen to. You always have a good presence and you always, the audience loves you, Margo.
Oh, thank you.
They do. I'm telling you.
Thank
listen,
you.
Listen, you guys, we got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Tweet Margo over there on Twitter at Margo Lightman and let her know you like her story. Then tweet me over there as well at Storyworthy. Would you do that?
Because you love Twitter.
You love Twitter. I love Twitter. We all love Twitter. And I'll turn you on to the Kruger Safari Park in Africa. And I want to thank all the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you support my sponsors like Ana Luisa Jewelry, then you are supporting me and my child. So thank you so much. And on behalf of the very talented Margo Lightman, again, thank you so much, really.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.